15% of the neighborhood to include accessory apartments is too large a percentage. Further, DHCA, they believe that DHCA should not have the authority to increase this percentage. In conclusion, staff believes that additional analysis of the numerous impacts providing an administrative review process for certain accessory apartments is necessary. Staff also believes that too many issues remain unclear for this text amendment to be adopted. Establishing a working group that incorporates concerns of both the citizens and the housing advocate groups should be the next step prior to reviewing any text amendment. We should also mention that the County Zoning Screening Committee reviewed this text amendment prior to introduction and expressed many of these same concerns and requested that the text amendment be sent back to the County Executive for revisions. I'll be happy to answer any questions, and the three of us are here as well.
Okay, well, let's save questions. First, I want to hear from the three speakers, Michael Carey, George Barnes, and Wayne Goldstein. Please come up. And when they're done, I'll invite DHCA to come to the table and either speak or be here to answer questions as they prefer. And we'll go into the substance. Mr. Carey, you're first.
Hi, my name is Michael Carey. I live in Silver Spring, the White Oak section of Silver Spring, and I'm here on behalf of myself and also the North White Oak Civic Association. I'm going to first read a statement from Barry Wides. His name is spelled W-I-D-E-S. He's the president of the North White Oak Civic Association. On behalf of the North White Oak Civic Association, a community organization representing over 500 homeowners living in the area bound by New Hampshire Avenue, Colesville Road, and Martin Luther King Park in Silver Spring, we are writing to express our strong opposition to legislation which would eliminate the need for a special exception to place an accessory apartment in a single-family home. Our community has been working with the Departments of Permitting Services in Housing and Community Development for years to deal with illegal rental units that currently exist in our neighborhoods. It is our belief that stronger legislation is needed to police illegal, overcrowded, and unsafe rentals in single-family homes rather than less. The problem that we have faced in our community is that many 1,500 to 2,000 square foot three-bedroom single-family homes are being used as boarding houses for 10 to 15 or more unrelated people. Many times the owner of the property is living on the property, many times they are not. The county is completely ill-equipped to address these types of unsafe living conditions as we have seen through past experiences in our neighborhoods. There have been fires in boarding houses such as those that I've been describing that have resulted in the loss of life in our county. We don't see how these agencies could monitor even more rental units and homes. Exempting accessory apartment rental units from the special exemption process will make it harder for community impact to be taken into account in the approval process. Many more units will be created in areas where the public infrastructure is already overtaxed. Our community has been in a building moratorium for years because the public infrastructure is insufficient to handle the existing population. Roads such as Route 29 are gridlocked during rush hour, and schools are over 120% capacity. The additional units this legislation would allow will result in greater traffic on overcrowded roads and schools. Representatives of our civic association would be pleased to talk with any of the members of the council to describe our frustrations with DPS and DHCD in dealing with unsafe and overcrowding rental properties in our community. Both agencies' resources and regulatory authorities are ill-equipped to deal with the current illegal rental situation, and this legislation will exacerbate the problem. That concludes the statement from Barry Wallace, president of the North White Oak Civic Association. I've been a resident of Montgomery County for 4 years. My wife and I moved here originally from New Jersey. And we moved into a neighborhood that has homes that were built in the 60s, quarter to third acre plots of land, homes anywhere in range from 1,300 to 1,600 square feet. And one of the problems we've had in the past is the permitting services and DHCA having problems enforcing accessory structures or additions that haven't followed the method in which they're supposed to get the permits to build these structures. And many times what has happened is that the homeowners of these properties have continued to build in violation of stop work orders, and when it comes time to go to court and address these issues, they're saddled anywhere from $100 to $250 fine, because it's pretty clear that the courts in this county do not want to make criminals of homeowners who do not want to follow the existing laws. My concern is that this kind of legislation is going to exacerbate that problem. You're going to have people who are not going to, who are going to follow the same method. They're not going to go through the prescribed process of which they're supposed to follow, as we've seen in other areas, in other situations. A couple other points I'd like to make. I think the consideration needs to be given to the various size of some homes we have in our community specifically. We have homes ranging anywhere from 1,300. We have a couple homes that are 1,100 square feet. And for a person to effectively double the size of their home to put on an accessory apartment, you're not creating an accessory apartment. You're creating a duplex. I think that's common sense. I was also surprised to find in my research on other issues regarding overcrowding that the R60 and R90 zones have no green areas, and I think that should also be taken into consideration when people are applying for accessory apartments. In summary, the Northwest Civic Association vehemently opposes this action.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Barnes.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. My name is George Barnes. I'm the zoning chairman of the West Montgomery County Citizens Association. We are quite concerned about the accessory apartment legislation. In my testimony to the county council, I did remark to them that I think that the large lot zones have some of the most potential for the use of accessory apartments. We have big houses. We have a lot of accessory structures, old stables, old buildings that nobody's using anymore. There are a lot of elderly people who live in these large houses that I have talked to who would like to be able to bring somebody else in to help them when they become a single person living in one of these houses. So the impacts of parking are less. The impacts on neighbors are less. So the larger lot zones do have the potential to provide more housing in those areas. However, it is our belief that all accessory apartments need to be maintained as special exceptions. The judicial process that you go through at the Board of Appeals is vital to prevent abuses that can occur if you start approving accessory apartments willy-nilly. The Board of Appeals process, the neighbors are notified, the local citizens associations are notified. I have been notified of some. I have never testified at one. We have never contested one in our neighborhood. But the judicial process and the right of appeal and the right of counsel is there at the Board of Appeals. I don't believe that the Department of Housing and Community Affairs is the right body unless you want to institute a parallel judicial process to the one that exists at the Board of Appeals, and I'm not sure that's something you want to do. I'm also not sure that the Board of Appeals, as it's currently constituted, could handle the load if you get a lot of applications for accessory apartments. So that's something you need to address, is who's going to be able to handle the load. But it is vital that these apartments be maintained with a judicial process for their approval. Furthermore, the Board of Appeals requires inspections, and the Department of Permitting Services is tasked with inspecting any special exception. And whether or not they have the capacity to inspect accessory apartments is another issue. It's hard enough for us to get the Department of Permitting Services to inspect anything, any special exception, which they're required by law to do once a year, and I don't believe it's done. They are better than they used to be. They are trying to inspect special exceptions. They currently do not do it. But that's an important safeguard however you do this. We ask you to think about the impacts on master plans and densities. If you approve a very liberal policy on accessory apartments, you could easily exceed planned densities, and the impacts are not clear. What would happen with your school enrollments, police and fire? Do you have enough infrastructure to handle a large increase in population in some of the more dense zones in the county? Is that something that the Board of Appeals, Housing Authority, whoever, whatever agency is going to do this, are they able to look at the cumulative effects of suddenly allowing who knows how many more dwelling units in a particular zone? So we ask you to retain the special exception process, recommend an equivalent process if you're not going to, and all those things that require that. We ask you to define neighborhoods very carefully, if that's one of the procedures that you're going to use in determining how many units constitute too many in a neighborhood. We personally believe that 15% is too high. We look for 10%. We look for 10% of a block, if there is such a thing as a block, to be had. And we recommend that you include all special exception uses, any other special use that already exists, as one of those things that count towards the percentage. So that if you already have three special exceptions and already have one accessory apartment, then you couldn't add another one in that block. So we think it's an interesting proposal, but we think it's very needs considerable thought. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Goldstein.
I'm Wayne Goldstein, first vice president of the Montgomery County Civic Federation, MCCF, and a member of its housing committee. MCCF opposes ETA 04-10. We believe that no more than 10% of a neighborhood should have uses such as special exceptions, rental houses, and accessory apartments. We define neighborhood as an area as small as a single block. We could see allowing up to 15% of such total uses, not just accessory apartments, in neighborhoods that are a part of transportation nodes, such as near transit centers. We support allowing an owner to continue to be absent for up to 6 months to necessarily accommodate those who spend the winters in Florida or other areas. MCCF opposes accessory apartments in new construction because it will double the density and make new housing even more expensive by giving the profit to the builder. We might support allowing the buyer of new housing to put in an accessory apartment in less time than the current 5 years, perhaps if the accessory apartment was guaranteed to provide affordable housing. When the Planning Board was considering its recommendations about the MPDU legislative package in September, you seemed to have a long discussion about wanting to create certainty that DHCA would not be able to allow a buyout after a project had been approved. This is why the Board insisted that approval of bonus density should be disallowed if an applicant later received a buyout. There is no question that the Planning Board and at HOC that DHCA Director Elizabeth Davison has greatly undermined the credibility of the MPDU program with her willingness to give away buyouts for a song and then explain it all away with a song and dance. Because of her repeated failure to enforce the intent of the MPDU law, it makes little sense to have a plan to give her further authority through ZTA 04-10 to make decisions about the location and concentration of accessory apartments. It is as if the fox, which had been guarding the hen house, had been given a contract to provide security for many more. There have been vague claims of alleged anecdotes about the difficulty in getting accessory apartments approved as a special exception through the Board of Appeals. It is absolutely no evidence to support such claims, although MCCF would support any effort to make this approval process more efficient without shortchanging the process or the opportunity for citizen input. There is no guarantee that accessory apartments will be affordable, and there is no requirement that they be so. Comments by the county executive or anyone else is little more than idle speculation about that. I would expect that accessory apartments, particularly near urban areas or in upscale neighborhoods, will be very expensive. Those who might rely on it to be able to afford to stay in their homes will need to get top dollar as well. The problem this county has is not with the accessory apartment approval process, but as you've heard from others, with the failure of DHCA to deal with the proliferation of illegal accessory apartments in certain parts of the county. Enforcement is like maintenance. If you don't do it regularly, things fall apart. Montgomery County doesn't like to spend money on maintenance or enforcement. As a result, this effort is like a band-aid designed to cover a gaping wound. I heard that DHCA wants to use the CTA to try to make legal what is and probably should remain illegal. DHCA may want to issue blanket approvals in these problem neighborhoods, and that's why it would need the arbitrary discretion to go over the 15% limit. MCCF opposes the two-size regulatory change as both arbitrary and as an opportunity for more DHCA mischief. My six-year-old is only 2 square foot. Two-bedroom, single-family house that was once big enough for a family of four is smaller than the cutoff point for a so-called small accessory apartment. Staff is too kind in recommending deferral instead of denial. All that is needed at this time is perhaps a more efficient special exception process for accessory apartments and a genuine commitment by DHCA along with the financial resources to do enforcement. Please oppose the CTA because it will create many more problems than it will solve. The current system can still allow a number of people across the county to have the opportunity to supplement their income in this way. The county may want to look at ways such as providing property tax credits in exchange for creating accessory apartments that also serve as affordable housing. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for this group? John?
Well, thank you for your testimony, and Mr. Barnes, I'm glad to see that you're able to appear before us today.
Thank you.
Okay, no questions. Thank you very much. Mr. Guerrero, would you like to come to the table? And then if you want to say anything, feel free, or do you just want to be here for questions?
My name is Joe Galoli. I'm here representing Elizabeth Davison, and I am the Chief of the Division of Housing and Code Enforcement for DHCA. And then after that testimony...
Also known as the Fox?
Yes, sir. Head Fox, apparently.
The Head Fox.
Just one preliminary comment. We have reviewed the staff report. We're in the position that any issues that have already been raised have been looked at quite extensively, and any additional issues that come up we feel can be adequately addressed in the probably numerous work sessions that the County Council will be scheduling on this particular amendment.
For clarification, as far as I can tell, they have not yet scheduled it.
No, I spoke to County Council staff this morning. There is no schedule for this in November, and they haven't gotten back as to whether or not it will be on the December calendar. Okay. But we think when it is scheduled, there will be adequate time to address these issues.
And that'll be the Fed Committee or the full council?
Initially, it'll be the Fed Committee, then full council.
Okay. Yeah, the council had its public hearing.
Yeah.
We did not testify because we were overloaded and we just couldn't get it to it in time. So it will now be the Fed Committee for work sessions. The earliest it could go to the Fed Committee is December 16th. My guess is they probably will not take it up until January.
Okay.
And as Joe said, I'm sure that they will have multiple work sessions. As soon as they get done with their multiple work sessions on the MPD legislation, they can start on multiple work sessions on this.
Yeah, that's one of my other programs. Okay.
I do have a question.
Mr. Bryant?
Would you say a little bit about the enforcement policy and procedures that you have responsibility for? And in doing so, would you also talk in terms of how you are made aware of violations?
The I guess overall, the department has enforcement authority over what's called Chapter 26, which is the county's housing maintenance code. That deals with all structures except new construction, which comes under DPS. We have code enforcement staff that enforces that statute, and we also enforce a number of the solid waste statutes for Montgomery County. We also have enforcement authority under Chapter 29, which is a landlord-tenant law, to make sure that if a property is rental, it is, in fact, licensed. We have authority over the registered living unit program, and we also have authority over the accessory apartments, except to the extent that the Board of Appeals approves them initially. My staff does testify before the Board of Appeals on whether or not the structure or the dwelling that is going up to be approved for an accessory apartment meets all applicable zoning and county housing codes. And so we have a whole array of enforcement. I believe the properties that the gentleman was talking about in the White Oak neighborhood deals with overcrowding conditions in single-family homes, which is a very difficult issue to enforce, but we are put on notice of that primarily by the neighbors, and we do, the extent to which the property is being rented, it needs to be maintained, and if it is overcrowded or it's an illegal rental, we do attempt to take enforcement action. We're much more aggressive in taking action where, in fact, we may have individuals occupying dwelling spaces that are, in fact, fire traps. So we do take aggressive enforcement action there, and we can condemn structures for that. But the gentleman is absolutely correct. It's a very difficult issue to enforce overcrowding in a single-family neighborhood.
How many staff do you have responsible for doing the inspections and doing the enforcement?
The housing code staff, I believe, involves 16 inspectors, 3 field supervisors, and about 4 administrative staff and a manager. And they all report directly to me.
Okay. And what are the number of housing units the 16 people are responsible for inspecting?
Well, there are, and Cynthia Gaffney can probably correct me, we have between single-family rentals that are licensed, individual condominium units that are licensed, and multifamily units that are licensed, it's probably in order of about 80,000.
That would be correct.
About 80,000 units. And in addition to that, we also do inspections, exterior inspections in single-family neighborhoods when it's brought to our attention.
Okay.
So it's quite a few. And then we have complaint-driven inspections, and then we also have inspections that are required by statute. Multifamily properties need to be inspected at least once every 3 years in the county.
That's 5,000 units per inspector.
That's
per
what I calculated it to. Yeah.
Of course, we don't inspect.
You're doing your head. You're better than I am.
Of course, use this. Of course, we don't inspect every unit every year, but we do inspect the multifamily units, and then we do some priorities on inspection. If it's a rental facility that's brand new, obviously we don't need to do 100% inspection. So we decide what number of units will be inspected on a yearly basis. And then we do have some older housing stock in the county, primarily in the Silver Spring Long Branch area, where in fact we do extensive ongoing inspections of the multifamily properties.
And is there a cycle, inspection cycle, that you expect an inspector to have, and what does that cycle look like?
The inspectors, the cycle for multifamily property is at least once every 3 years. A certain percentage of the multifamily units are inspected once every 3 years. The other inspectors are detailed based upon grid coordinates throughout the county. So if you're an inspector up county and you're inspecting solid waste complaints up around Boys, you obviously will be doing less inspections as if you're an inspector down in downtown Silver Spring. So we probably have about 12 or 13,000 individual complaints a year come in, which are tracked down by the inspector, and then we probably have about 10 or 15,000 license inspections a year.
Okay, so the 13,000 are essentially generated by complaints from neighbors and other people who, in fact, detect that something might be amiss.
Right, or they are properties that are identified by the inspector in the course of inspecting something else.
Okay.
And then we also do sweeps through some commercial areas and things like that.
Right. And in terms of your comp staff competent complement, from your perspective, you have the right complement in order to take on this additional work.
We think we do, and in fact, they are already inspecting accessory apartment applicants' property as they're currently doing it. The zoning board comes to DHCA to have the inspector go out and check out the unit, and then the inspector testifies at the hearing already.
Yeah, but if I understood correctly, in terms of, again, cycles, how often then does an accessory apartment unit get inspected?
It's supposed to be inspected once a year. We're trying to do that. Whether or not that is complied with, I'll have to get back to you. But the goal is to inspect the accessory apartments once a year.
Okay. All right, thank you.
All right, thank you, sir.
Can I just ask, what was the total number of complaints a year? You had 2 categories of complaints I didn't get.
We have about, if my memory serves me right, about 13,000 what we call individual code inspection complaints, and those are either generated by the inspectors themselves chasing down another one, where we get complaints in over the phone, or we get a lot of HOAs will call us in with a list of properties that have some exterior maintenance issues. So there's about, I believe, 12,000 to 13,000 individual complaints, and on top of that are the statutorily required license inspections.
How many of those are there?
I think that we probably inspect about another 12 to 14,000 rental units as part of that overall licensing inspection. And that could be from as few as 5% of the units in a multifamily property because they're in very good shape and they're not that old, or to 100% inspection of a property down county.
So between your scheduled inspections and your complaints, it's like around 25,000 a year?
Yes, ma'am, and some of them may even involve multiple inspections.
And it could be more than that.
Right.
So and now, also, do all the people inspect, or is it just the 16 people?
The 16 inspectors do the work, and the field supervisors also oftentimes will inspect as part of teams and things like that. And the amount of time it takes to do an inspection could vary from, as I said, a solid waste inspection up county, which would take a while to get there, to doing a 24-unit building in Silver Spring, where you could dispatch a couple inspectors and you can do it in a rather short order.
So could my math be right that the 16 inspectors average about 1,600 inspections a year? Is that possible?
I'd have to check the numbers, but that is quite possible because we just inspected a facility with 500 units in it.
So yeah. 500 units would count minus, so that would be...
Yeah, that's right. It would be number of units inspected, not number of apartment complexes.
So when you say 25,000, you're counting one apartment building with 500 units is 500.
Well, like we just inspected Georgian Woods, which is a 500-unit complex, and every unit was inspected.
So do you, I mean, just how do you count that? You count those 500 inspections?
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
Okay, so it's not quite as large as it sounds then, because you could do one building, or you could, how long does it take to do a 500-apartment building?
Georgian Woods, I think we had four different inspectors doing it, and it probably took about 3 weeks to complete the whole inspection, and then there's the follow-up inspections on the units.
So I guess what I'm trying to understand, it sounds like you do a thorough job when you're able to inspect, that how are they able to complete that number of inspections in a 365-day year? I don't know how many work days there are, but...
Usually the average is 250 work days.
Okay, so 250 days. How are they able to do each of them 1,600 inspections?
Like I said, if you're in an apartment complex, and it's been, and it will be pre-arranged with the manager. They go in, we have handheld computer equipment where the inspections, some of the inspections are done in the field on computer equipment.
Well, I guess, no, I'm sorry, I don't mean to interrupt, but I understand what you're doing.
Yeah.
You know, the action, I don't mean what the actual inspection involves. I mean, how much time are they able to give with 250 days? Are they working an 8-hour day?
Yes, ma'am.
40-hour week?
Yes, ma'am. And then if we need overtime, we do overtime on weekends to get into certain units.
So
if you want, I can get you this exact numbers. I can send you a report of exactly how many inspections we've done in the last 3 years to the number and how many code staff we've had to do that and how many multiple inspections there were. But there is quite a few inspections conducted in a calendar year, and we probably receive thousands of unsolicited complaints from the public, and each complaint is tracked down. And we think the fact that we've been able to really streamline the administrative process. In the past, they used to spend a lot of time in the office generating the inspection reports. Now everything is computerized, where they put the handheld equipment back into the cradle and the computer and the program generates the paperwork. And also, we've been able to have a program in the handheld which tells the inspector what other open complaints there are in a quarter mile of what they're currently inspecting. So we've been able to expedite quite a bit.
So you feel that you're adequately staffed for the work you have to do?
Yes, ma'am. I may not say that in March when I go to the county council for budget, but the reality is we feel we got
adequate. Well, you can tell me. I mean, you know, I talk to the council, too.
Well, we have an adequate staff at this point in time to handle the code inspections. We did last year pick up City of Tacoma Park asked us to take over their code inspections. So we took it over under a memo of understanding, and they did pay us for doing that, and they gave us a couple of their staff people.
So when you hear the complaints, like we had in the testimony right now about inadequate inspection and enforcement, do you have a response?
My response to that is that there isn't an adequate inspection. I think a lot of the frustration flows from the shortcomings of the statute itself to accomplish the result that the complaining party or legitimate neighborhood association or neighbor has about a situation. I don't think the difficulty is getting the physical resources to the site to do the inspection. It's whether or not the statute provides us the authority to compel the outcome that some people are looking for. And I think that's an issue that we are engaged in conversations with the county attorney. We're doing a search of other jurisdiction statutes to see if there is a better way to handle overcrowding in single-family properties. But I don't think the issue is getting the inspector there. It's whether or not the statute gives us the authority to compel the outcome that most people think will be legitimate.
Well, can you tell if there's overcrowding? I mean, or is it also a matter of figuring out what the situation is once you inspect?
It's a matter of figuring out how many cars are there and whether or not how many people. Sometimes it's very easy. Sometimes you can walk into a house and see 16 bunk beds on the first floor, and that's it. Sometimes it's easy to figure out, and sometimes it's not. And the inspectors have to see who's related to whom, which oftentimes is difficult to determine. But and we're also looking at the housing code itself. What a lot of people would consider overcrowding, in fact, the housing code may say, based upon square footage in the building, it doesn't constitute overcrowding. So we're looking at all those issues because we know overcrowding in certain neighborhoods is an issue. But like I said before, I don't think it's an issue of having the resources to identify the issue. It's having the statutory authority currently to solve it. And we're looking into what other jurisdictions are doing on that.
Well, is anything pending to change the statutory authority?
No, I just had one staff person doing the national search on what other statutes have dealt with that. And we'll see if, whether or not we have anything that makes sense because we have to be careful that we don't run afoul of fair housing laws while we're trying to deal with the overcrowding issue. So okay. we are looking into that.
Okay.
I don't have other questions of the staff from community affairs. I do have a question of the staff, though. It's obvious that you put a lot of time and thought into this piece of legislation. And I'm not sure whether or not this is a fair question, but let me ask it anyway. Did you consult with the officials at the Board of Appeals regarding this legislation?
Actually, the Board of Appeals are members of the screening committee.
They are part of the screening committee?
Yes, and they were part of the discussions we had. It's pretty long, probably a couple hours discussion on this.
And what generally was their view of the legislation and the intent of this zoning text amendment? Meaning, were they very, very supportive, or what kind of issues did they raise?
Yes, for the record, Carl and Gilbert, Development Review. I attended the public hearing. Greg could probably speak more to their explanations in the screening committee. But the public hearing, they did not take a position or side as to whether they were supportive or non-supportive of this proposed text amendment. What they were able to cite at that time were statistics relative to the number of special exception cases that are involved, total, particularly, specifically in the last 4 years, which I think were about 239, and 70 of those were accessory apartments, and that only one of those 70 were denied. I guess to take from that, the inclination I took from it was that while we receive a number of these, they're routinely approved, and that I guess the time and cost of factors involved with the applicant and staff could be issues with them.
Okay, so if I understand correctly, of the 70 that were approved, 70 that came forth, only one was denied.
Correct.
And they did not cite any impediments to the opportunity for more than 70 to come forth, did they?
No.
So there is nothing that's stopping people from applying for accessory apartments.
That's correct.
Then why is this so important then? Why is there a push for a piece of legislation that is designed to increase the number of accessory units if in fact the number of accessory units are coming forth, they're manageable, and this sounds like it's to jumpstart more when there seemingly is not a need. Would you help me understand that?
Well, I can't speak on behalf of the Board of Appeals. I can't say that they took a position. I think that's more of a response from DCH.
Oh, so you can answer that question?
Can I answer that question?
Yeah.
It's my understanding when the county adopted the housing policy, they did put in the housing policy that one potential source of additional affordable housing would be an expansion of the number of units available in the accessory apartments. I believe the reasoning behind going to an administrative process which necessitates a zoning text amendment is that if we could make the process less burdensome, I guess, on the applicant, that in fact there may be more accessory apartments approved in the county, which would result in more affordable housing being available. The obviously, it is not an established fact that if the process is changed, then in fact there will be more accessory apartments approved. It just seems that the current process seems to be a little more elongated than it needs to be. And in fact, if we put safeguards in the administrative process to protect against concentration and make the process more administrative as opposed to special exception, there's the possibility there may be more units produced while maintaining neighborhood stability and compatibility and not over-concentrating.
Okay.
It may very well be true that there isn't. So it was just that I wasn't in on all those policy discussions, but it would be my understanding if we're looking at the county housing report that that's what was the genesis for doing this. And it may very well be that not a single additional unit is produced under an administrative process, but in fact it may be.
All right, so, and I heard what you said.
That's about where we are.
But somewhere along the line, that means somebody, not you, but somebody determined that although 70 applications came forth, that there must have been some evidence that 70 more or more than 70 were about to come forth, but they determined that because of the onerousness of the process that they would not go forth, to therefore add to the housing.
The only thing I can say is I would think it's probably driven more by what appears to be logical as opposed to what is maybe fact. It seems the more streamlined a process an applicant has to face in getting an accessory apartment approved, logic would dictate that there may be more applicants and there will be more accessory apartment units.
Okay.
I think it's more driven by a logical argument as opposed to a factual argument. And in fact, there may not be any more units produced. We just don't know. I think to carry out one of the tenets of the housing policy would be to see if, by making it a use by right, I guess is the term, and making it more administrative, there's the possibility for more units being produced. But in fact, that may not be the case.
I appreciate your honesty. I would like to, Mr. Chair, I'm not making a motion because I know that we're discussing this, but I'd like to make a statement with the idea in mind that maybe this will draw out more of the sentiments from my colleague's perspective. After spending the kind of time I did on the Board of Appeals, one of the things that I picked up, although George and Wayne probably called me the friend and the agent, the developers. But one of the things that I picked up, even as an agent, is that the process has the potential of protecting not only the neighborhood, but even the people who want to do what it is they want to do, because there's a tension that's there. And I think that tension is very, very important. And as a result of that tension, that makes whatever it is that's being proposed come under a different kind of scrutiny. And there's not as much left up to the notion of quote, common sense, or it would seem that, or it's apparent that, but no substantive backing or substantiation that, in fact, there's a need. So I would have a tendency, looking at the phrase that says deferral, I would have a tendency to say to the county council, I think we ought to deny this, because in terms of what's been presented to me so far, as I understand it, there really is no substantive presentation of information or data that suggests that the way the system is not, in fact, effective. And it's proven to be effective from the standpoint that you still have an opportunity for inspectors to inspect, inspectors to make input, etc. And although you did not say it as strongly as I might be suggesting it, I'm under the impression that when it comes to violations, that your staff is more dependent on the eyes of the neighbors to cite violations and make you aware of them than that cyclical inspection that's being done by your staff. And so with that idea in mind, I would have a tendency to not support deferral even of this legislation, but just really, and you could use my name publicly so that I can take the heat, but I would say you ought to return this to the county exec's office and indicate that from our perspective, this is just an unnecessary piece of legislation at this point. That's what I would have a tendency to do.
Well, I think Commissioner Wellington might want to speak. I'm willing to wait, but I do have a somewhat different perspective. So.
Well, you go ahead. I wanted to ask staff a question.
Sure, go ahead. Ask your question.
Greg, what group was it that you said had met? Was it and said there should be a task force? Did you say in the beginning of your presentation?
No, the we recommend that working group, but the group that gets together on any zoning text amendment is the zoning screening committee.
And who's on that?
It's a number. Our staff, of course, Ralph Wilson from the county council staff, of the county attorney's office, of DPS, and the county executive staff as well.
They all suggested that there be a task force.
That it be sent back to the county executive for revisions to major revisions to. Yes.
While we're talking procedure, the county council, or at least the Fed committee, some time ago established a work program on affordable housing initiatives. Was this on that work program? And what did the Fed committee say about what they were expecting to get out of this?
I'm not.
Everybody's looking at Sharon. Do you know the answer to that?
I can tell you, for the record, Sharon Suarez,
mm-hmm.
Can you hear me now?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Since I've been here, and since March, or actually the beginning of April in 2003, accessory apartments have been on the plate. The genesis of that, I'm not aware of, but I know that in housing.
Well, this is not a trick question. While we're talking, can somebody please track down the county council's affordable housing agenda and tell us whether it's on there or not and what it says about it? Because it's.
I'll go get that, and I believe there is a definite reference to affordable to accessory apartments in that. It was the policy document that we're talking about from the county. It's a 2001 document.
That's the executive document. The question is whether a county council document.
Within
there's a county housing policy.
It's the latest
and
one.
And then there's probably a different document that the chairman's talking about.
I'm not talking about the housing policy.
There's only a different document, yeah.
I think it was last fall the Fed committee had a series of meetings where they hammered out this grand...
Yeah, there were about 15 different items on the list. Accessory apartments, public use of publicly owned land, et cetera.
Yes.
PDU,
yes.
A number of them. Yeah.
Well, while we're waiting on that, I guess to address what Commissioner Bryant said, on what we have today, I agree with Commissioner Bryant. But I was interested in what you said about the Fed committee schedule for when they will next hear this, because in reading the report, in reading the staff report, I just feel like I have very little information in terms of making an informed recommendation, and what information we have gotten so far suggests that the biggest problem isn't necessarily the process, but it's the enforcement. And I'm loath to increase the possibility of even more apartments or a burden on DHCA when, even though you're happy with your staffing level, to me, the number of inspections you have to deal with sounds virtually overwhelming. And you also say you lack the, once you make the inspection, the ability to really do much about it. So,
well, what I was talking about was the issue where there's overcrowding. We certainly have the authority to enforce the accessory apartments if, in fact, the accessory apartment is not in compliance with the special exception that they were granted. That's an easy code enforcement.
Okay, but let's say
the overcrowding issue just across the board, overcrowding on a single family house in a single family neighborhood is difficult to take enforcement.
Right.
So that's what I was talking about.
Okay, but my concern would be maybe you have a 1,200 square foot accessory apartment under this legislation, which is what, like three bedrooms?
I think the legislation calls for 800 square feet.
There's
special exception.
Right.
I think 800 and under is administrative. 801 and up is special exception still.
So you have an 800. Now, how large is that?
My name's Cynthia Gaffney. I'm the program manager for the licensing registration unit. And an 800-square-foot unit would generally be no more than two bedrooms.
So my concern would be if you have a two-bedroom apartment, the potential for overcrowding in those.
It's my understanding that we have not seen overcrowding in the accessory apartment units. We have seen extensive overcrowding in just single-family homes that may be rented out. We have not come across, as my understanding, a lot of overcrowding in the approved accessory apartments.
Have you had overcrowding in just regular apartments?
Yes, ma'am, we don't. And then we run into an issue. It's not so much square footage. It's how much of the unit can, in fact, be used for habitable sleeping space. And it may be a two-bedroom unit, which has a living room, but there's no law that the living room can't become a third bedroom. So you run into a lot of their occupancy standards that landlords would like to enforce, but which are much more restrictive than the county's housing code on how many people can occupy X number of square footage. And you run into an issue where there are fair housing laws that say you can't discriminate against large families, and then you have occupancy standards by landlords which are trying to limit that. So that's where the tension is. The real tension is in the overcrowding issue.
Okay, but wouldn't you have those same issues in the accessory apartments?
You would, but we have not seen that because we've not seen overcrowding in accessory apartments, at least not the license inspections that we make on an annual basis, hopefully. We
see. Do you know how many unlicensed sort of accessory apartments there are that were just done on without approval, without a special exception approval?
On an average, the code enforcement division receives about 100 complaints a year about illegal accessory apartments. Many of those complaints turn out to be not apartments at all. Generally, in a year, they probably have perhaps 30 to 40 actual illegal apartments, of which the code enforcement inspectors take actions against the owners if they do not take steps to legalize the apartments.
That's 20 or 30 units out of 15,000 inspections a year. Because you have at least 15 or 16,000 inspections a year based on the numbers that you gave us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And those would all be generated by someone in the neighborhood advising us that we need to take a look.
It seems to me, notwithstanding all the discussion about enforcement, I understand where we are as the following. In our discussions about affordable housing, and I don't know what you found in the report you dug out, Charlie. Yeah, well, tell us that, and then I'll...
One of the elements of the action plan for affordable housing Fed Committee developed just indicates review special exception process for affordable senior housing, accessory apartments, and other special needs housing.
Okay. The focus that I take it is to be on creating new units. The question about enforcement is an important one, but and there may be a need for more resources. There may be a need for different laws. I don't have a view on that. What I take the topic before us to be is creating new units. And so the review of special exception, the issue is there something in our process that may be impeding the creation of new units? So the proposal is one that's intended to make it faster and less expensive to create special exception units, accessory apartment units. Now, it's I think what we don't know is the underlying factual issue as to how expensive is it to create a special exception unit, or put differently, what's the elasticity of supply on this side? If you lower the cost by a little bit, do we get a lot more? We don't know the answer to that. Clearly, this is intended to lower the cost of generating special exception units, and it's not implausible to believe that lowering the cost would have some impact. What we don't know is how much impact. You could also lower the cost by saying, if you build a special exception unit, an accessory apartment, the government will pay you $1 million. That would increase the supply. And that would probably have an impact. Or you can say we will, the special exception process will make that go away. If you want one, you just fill out a form, or you don't even do that, you just build it. Those are things that lower the cost. There are other ways to lower the cost. We don't know the elasticity on it. Okay, but it's not implausible that lowering the costs somewhat may have some effect. Having said that, what I'm turning to this proposal, I have two things that are of concern to me. One is the line at 800. Now, unlike the staff report, it doesn't offend my sensibilities to have a line. If you have a line, something on the other side of it, that is at 801 or 601 or 301 or 1201, is on the other side of the line. That's what happens when you have a line. So that's not what troubles me. What I'm trying to understand is the significance of 800. I mean, why is that the right place to draw the line if you were trying to make it easy and more inexpensive to build some categories of special exceptions? Should it be 800? Should it be 600? You know, it's two bedrooms versus one bedroom versus efficiency versus small houses. Where does the 800 come from? Can anybody enlighten me on why that's the appropriate dividing line?
The rationale for the 800 was that the larger units would have more of an impact both on the neighborhood and the environment?
They'd have a larger impact. There are lots of different kinds of impacts. One is number of people. The other is visual, there's parking, but some of those are quite dependent on the underlying density of the neighborhood that you're in. If you're in 5-acre zoning, I don't know whether 800, 1200, that may not even notice it. If you're in R60, 800's the size of some of the houses, so you might notice it. So I'm just trying to get some sense of why 800 for everything, for all zoning categories, seemed like the right dividing line.
Because I think that was probably a compromise number, because in fact they were going to go from a special exception process to an administrative process. Well, I believe some of the discussion was to get some experience with doing it and have a break-off point at some point. And it's also my understanding there was a search done of other jurisdictions where they did cap the administrative process at 800 square feet. But logically, there would be no difference between the two as long as you could deal with the compatibility issues and the concentration issue. But I believe that is an issue which is still open for discussion at work session, and we would be more than willing to discuss any amendment on the percentage of concentration, on the square footage involved, or there would all be administrative. So it's that is would be open for further discussion at the work session. But
well, I guess from my point of view, I don't have enough of a factual basis to think 800 is the right cutoff. It does strike me as, at least in our relatively high-density neighborhoods, our R60, R90 zoning, that 800 it strikes me as a pretty big unit. And so
you're suggesting a sliding scale would make
sense? Well, either sliding scale, or if the theory is here we're trying to get experience, then a non-sliding scale, just a lot lower number. If we're trying to, we want to see whether it has an impact. I mean, on the economic notion, if you're building when you're building a larger unit that presumably is going to rent for more, the costs of the special exception process become an increasingly small percentage of the costs of doing it. And so the likelihood that that's having an impact goes down.
I
don't know what the right one. I just don't have a high confidence that 800 sounds pretty big.
No one's going to get a waiver from the normal lot coverage and setback requirements, right? They'd have to apply for that separately. So, in terms of impact on the neighborhood, is building a large accessory apartment in any way distinguishable from doing a tear down and building a big modern house, mansionization, as it is colloquially referred to, which bothers people too, but we have yet to legislate against that.
For habitability requirements. There was some discussion a year ago when I was looking at this issue, say no more than 40% of the square foot of the house or 800 square feet. Now, a percentage figure implies some vague sense, I think, of compatibility. If you start having 60% of the house in an accessory apartment, how can that possibly be conceptually or analytically viewed as an accessory unit in the sense of sense of quality of the neighborhood? You want the accessory apartment to be
to look like an accessory.
You don't want it to be gobbling up the exception. And I think that Wayne's testimony about 800 feet in a 1,000 square foot house, well, is that an accessory apartment? Although, just debating, I would point out that maybe we could have DHCA make accessory apartments available as a buyout unit, in which case they could kill two birds with one stone. But that aside, I think that there's like three categories here. It's the size of the lot, so maybe the ratio of the house needs to be, or the size of the unit needs to be smaller in relationship or proportionate to the house, and perhaps absolutely smaller in relationship to the zone, which is
well, that's in there. Pointing out, it talks about must be subordinate.
But they don't say, they don't define
it. No, that's subordinate to the Is that an absolute standard that, like in R60, R90, you can only have 40% of the house as opposed to 800 square feet, which can get some very skewed results depending on the base side of the unit? Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've seen drafted proposals floating around here where it was key to the percentage, and I think that was suggested to the department. I guess it disappeared.
Yeah, something. I don't know what the right percentage is, but it does strike me if compatibility in the conversation
compatibility concept,
800 square feet or some percentage of the house.